Hello and welcome to episode 16. So I'm just going to apologise in advance. I've had the flu for a little bit now and I still can't seem to shake it, so that's why my voice probably sounds a little bit weird. But I'm going to muster on, if that's okay. So yeah, I'm sure if you've probably noticed, we've been on a little bit of a break since the last episode. Myself and Alex have both been really busy with work and projects, but we have spoken and we're going to be getting together soon to record some new episodes, so look forward to that. In the meantime, though, I wanted to get some filmmakers onto the podcast to talk about their work and hope that you guys like really get something interesting from them. First up this week is Ollie Rankin, who, after spending 20-odd years working on visual effects for, you know, these little-known films such as Lord of the Rings, Matrix Revolutions, I don't know them, and there's a few more as well. He then went on to write and direct his first VR piece, Downloaded. So, without further ado, here's my chat with Ollie Rankin. First of all, Ollie, thank you so much for taking the time out to come and chat. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
So yeah, so maybe just kick off with telling us a bit about your background and how you got into VR.
Yeah, absolutely. I first got interested in VR as a teenager. You know, I grew up reading the likes of William Gibson and watching movies like Tron, and I sort of immediately saw the potential for VR. I got really hooked on the sort of cyberpunk ideas, and I really believed back then that by this point in time, we'd all have cybernetic implants and we'd be spending a good portion of our days in cyberspace. I had that kind of that vision for. Let's say 25 years, and it's still yet to come to pass. But I went to university. I studied computer science, artificial intelligence ended up being kind of my specialty back before it was cool. Mm-hmm. And not really having any clear idea of what sort of jobs that might lead to back in the mid-90s, I just stuck it out because I was very interested in it. And through a series of fortunate coincidences, it turned out that my background in AI was instrumental in getting me a job working with Peter Jackson and crew on the Lord of the Rings. Wow. So I was very, very fortunate that just as I was finishing university, they were getting started on the Lord of the Rings, and they were inventing this brand new technology using AI, or a form of AI, to control autonomous orcs and elves on these massive battle scenes. So I spent a couple of years there doing sort of hardcore R&D, sort of helping to invent the processes and techniques for simulating those huge battles. I say huge because the software was called Massive, and every time I talk about it, there's a block in my brain that prevents me from using the word Massive because it's an accidental pun. And that sort of springboarded me into a career in visual effects. So for the last 20 years, I've been working in the feature film and television visual effects industry in one role or another. But all this time, I've sort of been, waiting for VR to catch up to my teenage vision of where it would be. And so in between visual effects gigs, I would take time off to follow some, creative or technical pursuits. In, I think it was 2012, I took some time off and founded my company Pansensory initially to develop an iPhone game. And we developed and released an iPhone game. I single-handedly developed and released an iPhone game that didn't make me an App Store millionaire, but I learned a lot about real-time game engines and, sort of a bit about game design and UI, UX, that stood me in good stead for a couple of years later when it finally started looking like VR was going to become a thing, when the first Oculus crowdfunding campaign began. And so I started looking, more fully into how I could contribute to that, into sort of, into triggering the mass market uptake of VR that I still think is necessary to make it into a viable medium. There was a part of me that had always thought that adult entertainment was going to be the driving force that led to mass adoption. Mm-hmm. So that was something that I sort of explored to one degree or another. I've consulted on and was involved in development of a number of VR projects. And one of the things that I realized quite early on as I was sort of consulting on VR films that were being made was that realistic representations of human beings in VR was going to be an essential part of storytelling in VR. I figured that what we now call sort of volumetric video or light field video, before there were really any companies offering that, I started trying to put together a team to develop technology to do that. And in the process of trying to put together that team, I was actually introduced to one of the founders of a company called Uncorporeal Systems, which I ended up joining in New York in 2016. And for a year and a half, I worked with that team sort of building out technology in a pipeline for capturing, processing, and displaying volumetric performance capture and holographic humans in VR. But really, all along, my passion has been the storytelling aspect of it. I love the technology, and I do have quite a technical bent. But what I really want to do is tell stories. And last year, the Vancouver Economic Commission hosted a roundtable with a bunch of local film, television, animation, gaming, and VR people. And out of that, we put together the producing team that developed and produced Downloaded, which is the VR film that I'm taking to the Venice Biennale at the end of this month.
So is that your first VR film?
Yeah, that's the first one that really that's really seeing the light of day. I've worked on a number. I directed a few little sort of VR films that were really little more than tech demos in the past. So yeah, I'm calling this my first VR film, even though arguably I've got some others to my name.
Yeah. Cool. So how did the idea for Downloaded come about? Is that something that had already been like sort of festering for a while and you're just kind of waiting for the technology to catch up, or
Yeah, in a way, and I do have sort of I have a whole host of ideas that are still waiting for the technology to catch up. Mm. But one of the most sort of fundamental tropes of cyberpunk literature is the idea of being able to have a human consciousness simulated inside a computer, and so it always felt like that was one of the first stories that needed to be told well in VR. And I've also felt that interactive storytelling is something that we really need to be pushing in VR, because that's one of the things about VR that separates it from other forms of storytelling. Obviously Netflix has experimented with some interactive branching narratives, mm-hmm. and there are, you know, you've got your choose your own adventure books, and yeah. people are doing similar things on YouTube. But really, it's only when you put somebody in VR that you give them that ability to be a character in the story rather than just sort of a god figure that's calling the shots. The idea was if we can tell a story about the human consciousness being digitized inside of a computer, and we can make it an interactive story. And then I also, you know, because I have this sort of this technical background, and because I'm very aware of what the sort of current capabilities and limitations are of the technology, I pretty much wrote a story that fit within those limitations, within those boundaries. And I guess then there's also the sort of the meta aspect of it, which was, you know, one of the big sticking points with VR, one of the things that people complain about as being a problem with VR, is that it's an inherently isolating medium. When you put on a headset mm-hmm. and headphones, you're cutting yourself off from the rest of the world. And so my thought was, well, wouldn't it be fun if we told a story about how technology isolates us socially, using VR in such a way that we encourage people to have real world social interactions afterwards. So, you know, I've always been inspired by and in many ways downloaded is a product of the inspiration that I got from going to immersive theater type productions, like the Punch Drunk productions, mm-hmm. Sleep No More in New York is one of the most well-known of those. But I was even more inspired when I went to another one in Brooklyn called Then She Fell, which weaves the story of Alice in Wonderland with the real-life story of Lewis Carroll's obsession with the girl Alice that he wrote that story for. Mm-hmm. And the thing that I always liked most about Sleep No More is that you would go to the pub afterwards with your friends who'd all been in the same performance, and you'd all had a completely different experience of that performance. And it was only by comparing notes that you're able to piece together the broader story world. And to me, that was such a powerful tool in social narrative. And so I wanted Downloaded to have that same effect on people, that a group of friends could each try it and would each get a different version of the story, and then would sit around with a beer afterwards and sort of compare notes and piece it all together.
So how did you shoot it then? Because, like, just from doing my researchy bits online and stuff, obviously, the certain bits with the actress in the film, it was just shot on a regular camera. So presumably the rest of it is all computer generated.
Yeah, so we used a set of techniques that in visual effects we call 2.5D. Mm-hmm. And it's a very efficient way of creating the illusion of fully three-dimensional space, by combining elements that individually are only two-dimensional, but if you combine them together in a three-dimensional space, then you can create an illusion of a fully three-dimensional experience. So we built the set where the real world part of the story takes place. We built that set and we scanned it with a laser scanner, and we took a lot of photos so that we could do photogrammetry. Mm-hmm. And then we filmed the actress on green screen. And then the sort of the virtual world part of the story takes place, inside of a computer. And so that's a more of a stylized 3D representation. Mm-hmm. But what you get for the real world is this fully three-dimensional virtual recreation of the live action set that we built. And then the actress She's on what we refer to as a card. So she's a flat piece of video, but she's not just played back directly into your eyes flat. She's actually on a, it's like she's on a billboard that moves backwards and forwards in depth. Okay. So she's always the right distance from you. She's the right scale. You can move your head and look past her and see the rest of the world behind her. So all of those things add up to the illusion of it being, of her being three-dimensional, even though she's actually flat. And because of a couple of other tricks that we do, it's very rare for audience members to notice that she's actually two-dimensional. And it's really only when she comes right up to you and sticks her face in yours that you might get that clue.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So sticking with the actress, so you mentioned that you had like when we'd like been chatting on email and stuff, that you had and I already feel that I'm probably going to butcher this name, but Tierra Skovboy.
Luckily her last name is actually much easier to pronounce than it looks.
Oh, so I've made it way more difficult for myself.
yeah, so it's actually just pronounced Scobie.
Okay. That's nice.
The V is silent. It's Tierra Skovboy.
Okay. So you had Tierra Skovboy from Riverdale, which is, I understand, is a pretty popular show at the moment. I haven't seen it myself. But how did that come about? Because presumably this, Riverdale had been a thing prior to you guys shooting this, so... How did she come up?
That's right. Yes, we were very lucky to be able to nab Tierra when we did. You know, she's a very talented actress, and her star is rising. She's headlining or heading up a new TV series that's about to come out this later this year. And it was just again a very lucky set of circumstances. One of the producers of Downloaded, Rochelle Chartrand, is happened to know Tierra's agent, and so we were able to make the connection that way. And Tierra was excited at the possibility of being in a VR project. And also, you know, we have a much bigger vision for this than just the short that it is currently. So, you know, we were able to get Tierra excited about the possibility of, you know, what we're hoping to develop into an episodic series over the long run.
So presumably she'd never done any VR stuff before.
That's right. This was her first time in VR.
Nice. Has she ever tried it before, or was this a completely new thing to her?
The very first time that she tried VR was just maybe a week before we filmed her.
Oh, wow.
We got her in and showed her sort of a mock-up of what the experience was going to be like from the audience perspective. So yes, it was quite fun to put her in the headset and have her see for the first time that sort of get that experience of three dimensions.
And I guess that probably helped her performance as well, because then she could get a better idea of, you know, how it's all going to look.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And just sort of to understand, what the audience's perspective is going to be, because, you know, normally when you're filming a TV show or a movie, you know where the camera is, you know what lens is being used, so you kind of have an idea of how to project your performance based on that. But in VR, you never really know where the audience is going to be looking from. Yeah. So it's kind of like the theater in the way that you have to project a performance that will be compelling to everybody, no matter where in the theater they're sitting. Similarly, in VR, you're giving a performance, based on the knowledge that the audience might not be in any given position.
Mm. Oh, absolutely. That's cool.
And that was also a big part of why we were so happy to get Tierra in the role. Is, you know, she has a very expressive face and great body language, and you know, we were confident that her performance would read to people. So yeah, worked out great.
Awesome. So is the plan still ahead to turn it into a series then? Because if she's like going to be fronting a show, like later on in the year. I don't know, like conflicting schedules, maybe.
Yeah, we'll definitely have to work around the schedule. But I think they may have already finished shooting that show.
Oh, perfect! That's why I don't have to worry about it. She's free. So yeah, so you're going. You mentioned earlier as well that you're going. Are you actually going to Biennale at the end of the month as well? Or
that's right. Yes, I am. So. Yeah, I'm very, very excited. You know, that show has been going on in one form or another since the 1890s. So it's very humbling to be invited to take part in it.
Absolutely. Oh, that'd be brilliant. So what is the plan like going forward after that? Then what's next? Are you going to then just sort of carry on working on the series, or do you have any other projects that are coming up that you want to work on?
So I'm working on a number of other VR projects at the moment, and just with film and television. I think it's quite common for a production company to have a number of different projects in different stages of development. So we're working on an interactive music video at the moment.
Okay, cool.
And working on a couple of climate emergency related pieces, and also working on a couple of documentaries. So where Downloaded is at is that, you know, we're taking it to Venice. We've submitted it to a couple of other festivals. Just found out this week that we've been accepted into another festival, but they haven't made the announcement yet, so I can't actually tell you which one that is. And yeah, so we'll be taking Downloaded to a couple more festivals and conferences, and using that exposure to try and raise money for the bigger vision. And we basically have, you know, we've put together a couple of different budgets, and depending on how much money we're able to raise, we will have a more or less ambitious vision that we'll be trying to fulfill. Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
But yeah, what I really envisage is, you know, something like Black Mirror, in that it's a series of stories that don't necessarily have a continuous narrative running through them, but they're tied together by common threads. Mm-hmm. In this case, the main common thread will be this notion that you can digitize a human consciousness and transfer it into a computer. But once you've established that, you know, think of all of the different stories that you can tell based on that. You know, once you're inside one computer, what's to stop you traveling through the internet and finding yourself in somebody else's computer? You know, sort of hacking into various databases and servers, or printing yourself back out into other places.
So, or like a smartphone. I mean, it could be.
Yeah, absolutely.
It could be anything. I like that. I really like that idea. That's really cool. Make sure you do it. I need to see this now. It's out there now. The people need to see it. Oh, that's awesome. So is it just, are these all the other projects that you mentioned you're working on? Are they all personal projects, or are there some client projects and stuff as well?
No, the ones that I've mentioned are either personal or sort of co-productions. But we are also looking for contract work for hire. Mm-hmm. And exploring a couple of possibilities there as well. It is, you know, notoriously difficult to make money in VR at the moment.
Yeah.
Uh, And again, we're really hoping that the exposure and sort of boost to the company profile that this is getting will open us up to opportunities like that.
Yeah, I mean sticking with the subject of, you know, being difficult to make money with VR at the moment, like what do you feel is what the industry needs to really sort of pick up and sort of get to that point?
I mean, I'm very bullish about the Oculus Quest. Mm-hmm. I really think that that stands a chance of being a sufficiently successful consumer VR device, mm-hmm. that you'll have a big enough market out there that you can realistically make money from selling content to VR headset owners. And in that case, you can realistically ask investors to put money in to make projects that are then going to be sold. So it's, you know, it's a chicken or egg thing, really. But yeah, I really think that the Oculus Quest has the potential to be that sort of tipping point that creates a snowball and builds to a bigger industry. You know, I think even the Oculus Quest, as great of a device as it is, you know, I still think it's maybe the mini disc where the HTC Vive and the Oculus Rift are the laser disc. but we're still waiting for the CD and the DVD, the Blu-ray to come along, you know. I think waiting's the wrong word, because all of us that are involved in the space, we're pushing ahead, mm-hmm. knowing that those devices are going to come along. Yeah. Maybe there's going to be a way of experiencing VR without a headset that will, you know, have a huge impact. Or maybe there'll be glasses that are as unobtrusive as people's reading glasses. Mm-hmm. You know, it's hard to know, and I'm not the one to predict what that technology is going to be. Mm-hmm. But what I do know is that all of the lessons that we're learning from creating content for the current generation of HMDs is informing that next generation mm-hmm. of content mm-hmm. for whatever that next generation of devices is.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's a weird one. I was talking to a friend about this the other day, and I think when all these like newer headsets were coming out, I think a lot of people were kind of jumping into the industry thinking, oh, this is, if I get in early, I can make some money out of it. And then kind of almost, you know, like a year or two down the line, then leaving it because they weren't making any money out of it. And I think it is going to be like, you know, the people that see it out, the ones that are creating the content, are the ones that, like you say, are going to inform how the technology progresses going forward.
Yeah, I think that's. I think there's only one step missing in that plan. It was, if I get in early enough and survive long enough, then you can make some money. I read a great article a couple of years ago that was talking about, you know, in the startup space, everybody wants to be a unicorn, but in the VR space, before you can be a unicorn, you really need to be a cockroach, you know, a metaphor for something that can survive through the tough times. And
I like that. I like it. So that kind of segues sort of quite nicely into what I was going to ask you next. So like what advice would you give to like other creators that would be looking to get into the VR space?
You know, Don't just get into it if you're trying to get rich. get into it if you have a passion for the medium. Get into it if you want to be in an industry where there's the potential to break new ground, to invent new ways of storytelling, new metaphors, new language for storytelling. Get yourself into a position where you can create as much as possible as quickly and cheaply as possible, because we need experimenters who are willing to take risks, make mistakes, and iterate. You know, it took us 120 years to get as good as we are at telling stories on a flat screen. We can't afford it to take us 120 years to get that good at telling stories in VR. But if we have enough, enough people experimenting and sharing what they learn and learning from each other, iterating quickly, learning from theater, from film, from television, from video games, taking all of the lessons that we've got from all of those sort of past mediums, and also, you know, taking advantage of analytics and the ability to capture data. So one of the things that we did in Downloaded is that every time somebody goes through the experience of Downloaded, we're recording their head position, their hand positions, their actions, and we're able to time that or to look at that data alongside the beats of the story. Okay. And we're able to use that to say, hey, we're noticing that people aren't picking up on this part of the story, or people are looking in the wrong direction at this time, or people are trying to use the hand controller in this way. And we're using all of that information to feed back into the next iteration, to make it more intuitive, to make it a better experience for future viewers. Mm. So I guess another thing is to say that, you know, people might not necessarily realize that their skills are valid in virtual reality, but we need all of the skills from writing and art through filmmaking, video games, programming, database, every single technological capability is actually going to be relevant to VR in the long term. In the same way that, you know, in the early 90s when the internet was starting to get some traction, there was this distinction between internet companies and the rest of companies. You know, nowadays, any company that's not on the internet doesn't really exist as a company. So the same is going to be true in a few years with spatial computing and whatever VR, AR, MR becomes. There's going to come a time when if you don't have a presence in spatial computing, you'll cease to be relevant.
No, I think you're absolutely spot on there. Absolutely. So going back to Downloaded very quickly. So once it's done the festival run, how are you planning on releasing it? Have you thought that far ahead yet, or just kind of see what happens?
Yeah, well, we've had a couple of approaches from people that want to exhibit it. One of our co-producers, Y Dreams Global, who actually put up the money to shoot the thing in the first place. They are a Brazilian-Canadian company that are actually building a VR arcade platform in a box so that people can buy and open up VR arcades. Oh, cool. Very easily, sort of almost plug and play. Mm. So, you know, obviously they recognize the need to have content for their customers. So we're planning to exhibit Downloaded through their affiliates. And we've also been talking to a couple of companies in Europe that are looking to show it there. But we're also mindful of the fact that we want to build it out into this bigger enterprise. And so if we are successful in raising money, it may be that what we've made of Downloaded so far never gets a full public release. It might just be something that we use as a teaser. Mm-hmm. To get investors and collaborators excited about joining us in this production.
Awesome. Sounds amazing. Well, hopefully at some point there'll be a VR arcade near me where I can go and check it out.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll one way or another, we'll make sure it happens, Daniel.
Awesome. That's perfect. That's the best answer you could have given to that. Okay, brilliant. Well, start wrapping up now, but where can people connect with you online?
So pansensory.com is a good starting point. PANSENSORY.com. But we're also Pansensory on Twitter, Pansensory on Facebook. You can find me on LinkedIn, Ollie Rankin.
Okay, cool. I'll link all those in the podcast notes anyway. But again, thank you for taking the time out to come on and chat about Downloaded. Yeah, it's been great. I really appreciate you taking time out.
Yeah, my pleasure, Daniel. Anytime.
Thank you so much, man.
Massive thanks to Ollie for taking the time out of his day to come on the podcast. Be sure to go give him a follow online to keep up to date with what he's working on and all things Downloaded. If you enjoyed this episode, then I would be eternally grateful if you could leave us a review on iTunes, if you listen via Apple, that is, as it really helps. Also, if there's any other 360 VR filmmakers you'd like me to try and get on the podcast, then feel free to reach out to me with any suggestions, either on Instagram or Twitter at Daniel K. Hatton. That's HATTON. So yeah, that's that. Thanks for listening, and I shall see you in the next one.